So yeah, I'm liking the ideas about the intro. It's just at this moment, I came into this with not a whole lot of knowledge. I can barely edit my stuff, even though I'm pretty good at it. That's about all I can do.
I'll create an intro for you, man. I got software. It'll take me like a half hour. Let's set up a call towards the end of next week or maybe over the next weekend, and let's book an hour, and we'll sit there. I got software. We'll find some cool sound bites, and we'll put your graphic in it. We'll just work it on a real time on a Zoom. You know, we'll consider it a little quid pro quo for having, you know, offering to have me on your show.
Oh, so, well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm good with the creative stuff. I miss my calling in life with the marketing, and I'm happy I did, because they're a dime a dozen, and I don't want to be knocking on people's door. Can I write your website? No way.
Right.
So yeah, happy to do that, man. Let's carve out some time after 420. This week sucks, as you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I hear you.
And if I come up with any ideas in between now and then, when I'm have some free time, I'll let you know. Any cool graphics or anything that we might... Actually, you don't need graphics. You're sticking with audio, so sound bites.
Yeah, so...
Cool.
But yeah.
My thoughts there is have it be a two-phased introduction. You have your general... your intro, which is copied and pasted into every episode. Consistent intro and outro, music, whatever you want to do. And then have a secondary introduction, which spotlights the topic. Right? So you might be able to take other sound bites from the news, headlines, and be very dynamic with that second sound bite and say, hey, the FDA is really cracking down on, you know, product label warning and something like that or whatever. And, you know, a little more formality. And then you say, in this week's episode, we're going to be diving into some of the discrepancies with, you know, product labeling and false claims for patient safety. And we've got so-and-so here on the show to really dive into the topic. So it's got that progressional feel. That's my advice.
No, I'm loving it. I love the idea for sure. Even though I'm not so specific with the title, well, not the titling, but with the topic, it's more for the other person and you know, their business and what they're doing and their passions in life, you know.
Still do it though, because what people like to have lined up is a topic to talk about,
right?
It maximizes your value in theirs. It gives them a chance to prepare. I've got my elevator speech. I don't need it. I can talk out the wazoo, but not everyone's still pivoting. They're still getting their messaging, and they may not be as well articulated and would like to think through things. So just kind of think through your audience, and maybe they need a little more time to prepare their thought process to maximize your show and make sure that they sound as intelligent as possible, and they're not kind of clamoring and stuttering through things. That was my first podcast. It was great. So embarrassing. I'm like, I am a life science guy, but there's like a quiver in my voice. I was talking to somebody like really famous, and I was like, I don't belong here. But yeah, no, I think that would be dope if you do that. And you know, I saw your post last night. I was ignoring Facebook all day yesterday. Yesterday was my 9 month sobriety day, and I was just spending it with the family.
No, yeah, that's absolutely amazing. 9 months to, well, congratulations.
I had to take down my post. I posted it was 10 months, and I'm like, counted. I'm like, fuck, I just went back in time a month. It was so disheartening.
Oh shit!
It's like losing a notch on your belt.
Well, that's still amazing.
God. Stoked. So everything's directionally correct. I'm going to keep going, and I can't build this industry drunk.
Right.
Nobody can.
And right.
I can't do it sober. You know, I've had to quit smoking pot during the day just to get through work, which was not preferred, but it did help with my tolerance. So, c'est la vie. You know, now at night when I sit down and chill, that indica hits a lot harder, and it's a lot more medicinal and relaxing. Just kind of smoking and burning money and all that, you know.
Tell me a little bit about your story of recovery, if you would like.
Yeah, are we recording? Because I'm totally fine with it being recorded.
Yeah, no, we've been recording for right about on. 4 minutes now.
I'm an open book, you know. So I came out of the life science space. You know, I'm the founder of Precision Quality Compliance. I spent 22 years in the life science space working for Becton Dickinson, Wyeth, and ultimately Pfizer. And life just got to a crossroads in 2018 where I was looking to pivot, midlife crisis, turning 40, tired of doing what I was doing, tired of being passed over in Pfizer and 100,000, you know, person company. So I left, and it was really that, you know, just getting passed over, the events, drinking every night, going out 4 or 5 nights a week, and staying, you know, it's a nightlife, the cannabis industry, especially in the legacy market. So between that and COVID, which everyone went through, it just became life. And life was over, really hot and heavy, leaving the job and putting the stress on the family. So I started drinking really heavily, and it was just not doing anything good for my family. I was on a track to get divorced. I was going to move out and found an apartment, and then went out and got myself arrested because of just my behavior and, you know, resisting arrest, assaulting an officer, which didn't happen. It was just optics. And, you know, ultimately that was reduced to a misdemeanor or a disorderly disturbing the peace. But it was just me behaving inappropriately for years. And, you know, last year I checked myself into a rehab, got sober, and, you know, with the support of my super, all the support of my family, just dealing with my crap over the years, right? Because I put my wife in that situation and my family, you know, leaving my company, nice paying, high paying Pfizer job, and jumping into this emerging industry of which I'm still waiting to make money. I was getting annoyed when people were like asking for free work. I'm like, I've been working for free since 2018, guys.
Right.
It becomes that yesterday's price isn't today's price, but I don't like saying that. That's not true. At the end of the day, you know, the rehab was an eye-opening experience. It was absolutely necessary. You know, my family had drinking problems. I need to get away from that, break the cycle. And this industry is too critical for me to be doing what I'm doing around public safety and health and everything to be doing it without a clear mind. And so the rehab was very eye-opening. I actually really enjoyed it. I'll be quite honest. I didn't want to leave because it was a month and it was a live-in facility. They actually stuck me in my home town. The house was in my hometown. I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm going to see somebody I know. But that didn't happen, of course. And it was just an eye-opening experience with the cannabis overlap and the reluctance to be more tolerant or accepting towards cannabis as a recovery mechanism or tool in this capacity. And I had to be very hush-hush when I was in the rehab. Other people were in there for cannabis and weed and smoking weed and saying they're addicted to it, whatever. There's other stuff on their plates. But I don't want to be a trigger point for anyone. Who am I to tell anyone, you know, that cannabis is addictive for them? It may be. I don't know. It doesn't have addictive qualities, but the lifestyle might be something that they're attractive to, or the friends, or the camaraderie of just be feeling engaged. You know, that's all very much an addiction as well. And, you know, so whatever the case, I took every ounce of my being and put it into that and really tried to save my family, and we're doing great. My wife and I are back where we were when we met in college up in New Paltz. We went to college together. Been together for about 22 years. And, you know, the family's doing great. The kids are super appreciative. They see a difference. You know, my kids are young and I'm at a point where I can get in front of that. So, you know, it was eye opening, and carrying that forward into my entrepreneurial journey here, but more as a side project, more as just a passion. I want to be able to, you know, what's the problem with AA meetings? Right, the AA meetings are just it's fully abstinence and fully abstinence practice, and I don't really believe in that. And I might even have a beer one day because I'm not sure I'm an alcoholic. I just life was crazy, and I don't believe in full abstinence because you'll stress yourself out more avoiding everything and trying to live a perfect life. Just have some willpower and have some, you know, responsibility. And for me, it was a matter of growing up out of my 20s and 30s. And getting into my 40s. And my 30s were just a challenge with having kids, adapting to that, leaving my company. It was just life, period. Right. Everyone goes through it. And for me, it was great. And I'd love to be able to apply a lot of those learnings, especially from the rehab. I feel like it was like a rehab recon. I feel like we should do a show. After we're done with Cushion Coffee, let's get a rehab recon going.
Rehab recon.
Undercover boss. And no, I don't want to do that because it puts a spotlight on people trying to do the right thing. But it was eye-opening to me when I was there that the reluctance for reimbursement for insurance on the cannabis, or just even using cannabis as a tool outside of Suboxone, and you know, the people that were in there were coming off of crack, meth, right, you know, heroin, opioids, benzos. You know, it wasn't everything. It was everything. So
I've spoken a number of times about pharmaceutical products. Yeah, I mean, I've spoken a number of times on Cushion Coffee with my solo content, and with I had a drug counselor on. I had nice. I think you know Carrie with Epigenetics.
What's the last name?
Carrie Bailey. She's got the Folium Epigenetics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we always talk about how cannabinoids can be used for I don't want to say issues, but like concerns like that, concerns for addiction, and because I mean Suboxone is such a terrible thing, you know, it can make you sick. You know, if you take someone that doesn't have any issues or problems and you give them Suboxone, it's going to make them sick, you know?
It doesn't help. And, you know, there's so many antipsychotics. There are people, like, I'm in the rooms and people are just falling asleep and drooling on themselves. I'm like, this is recovery?
Right.
You know, and, like, you come out of that and you're still in this catatonic state where you still need to recover from that now.
Yeah.
And it's not it's not directionally correct in the recovery step. It's either a parallel or a step backwards in my mind. Yeah, I don't know. I've lost three best friends to opioids and heroin, and you know, one of which the poor mother found them in a motel room.
Wow.
Others have just gotten into pills and a lot of that mess over the past 20 years and the oxy problem. So I'm standing here by myself.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of friends. Everyone I talk to in the cannabis industry is my friend. And I was very adamant about stepping into this space about making friends, because I don't need to see anybody else die, honestly. And the lack of traditional institutions to offer resources to people in recovery or alternatives, we're getting past that now with cannabis. It just needs to change. And I get it. A lot of those traditional institutions are handcuffed by federal legalization, right? Mm. The insurances can't provide reimbursement. I'm sure they would love to. Do they want to see people die? No. But it's this red tape and this bureaucracy. So bringing a full circle back to PQC and kind of some of the stuff I'm working on outside of my core set of responsibilities, more for a passion with recovery, is I want to be able to stand up support groups for people in recovery that, I mean, we sit in a circle, we smoke pot, and we talk about our feelings. Sound familiar? You know, it's what cannabis was intended for,
right?
For the most part, at least what we've all been doing for the past, you know, couple hundred years. So, 1,000 years, sorry. You know, really, I want to ensure that those outlets are available to people, you know, and it's the reimbursement for costs. I'm a medical patient. Not an extreme medical patient. I'm not chronically ill. I can't take Advil or pain meds without having allergic reactions and breaking out in the hives.
Right.
So it's an anti-inflammatory for me. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of maturity, a lot of invisible money to be made in the in-between space, non-plant touching space that, you know, I always encourage people to go towards if they don't want to go for a license.
Right.
But I'm very happy, bringing it full circle. I'm very happy to be sober, and it has opened up doors for being asked to be on events, being asked to be on your podcast. I'm very grateful for that, and I'll shut up there.
No, it's not a problem. I appreciate you coming on. You know, it's I'm actually surprised of how willing people are to just be like, hey, I'll come on your podcast and talk to you. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter. You know. People are actually very more willing than I thought that they were going to be. I'll be honest with you.
You hit the nail on the head. That was one of the first things I observed in the cannabis industry, because I had one goal, and it wasn't to do business from 2016 to 2020 when I formally launched the company. That was to know anyone and everyone in New Jersey who was doing something. And the best part about the industry is everyone is accessible, from the mom and pop to the millennial to the graduate to the college curriculum professors to the CEO of Canopy Growth, the old Bruce Linton, who's kind of faded. But ultimately, people are accessible. I was at a Canna Gather event where Bruce was speaking back when he was over at Canopy and in New York, and he's getting bum rushed, by people at the door. And somebody's like, "Bruce, your shoe's untied." I'm like, "Oh, this is great." I get down on one knee like I'm proposing to the guy while he's tying his shoe, and everyone else is trying to get his attention. And I just slip him a card and I said, "I oversaw Pfizer's manufacturing, regulatory operations, and quality control." He's like, "I will call you on Monday." Unfortunately, the card I gave him was my old pivot company and not my quality compliance company. It was Grassroots Collaboration Group, which had nothing to do with what I did.
Oh,
So
shit.
he probably just looked at it and was like, "What? No, this
Oh,
isn't." He was
shit.
looking for a Pfizer card, and I didn't have that. So, people are accessible, and it's really nice because, I'll be accessible to anyone. I'm nobody. But, the level of camaraderie of people willing to engage people, and it's hit or miss. There's people out there that are selfish and jerks and assholes, excuse my language, but
Oh, you're all good.
there are more of the good people than bad people in this industry. And I'm really happy to be a part of it while that ratio is still where it is. So
No, it's been an absolutely amazing journey so far. Well, I'm just hitting 3 months, 4 months doing this. I love it. I love doing it. I love.
tell me about you. I want you to talk and tell me about the show and how you got into it, because and I'll talk forever about what I do and we'll get into that. But I'm kind of curious about your journey into the space too. And
I mean, I would have these long, drawn out conversations with people, and they would be, I mean, I don't want to say highly intellectual, but they'd be, we'd go pretty deep and pretty far into a lot of different things.
lots of
And
cover.
it's just, I love talking to people. I love uncovering what they have to say. And especially when you have a huge itinerary like you do on Facebook, it shows everything that everywhere you've worked. You want to give me a rundown on SAP security admin? Because I did a little research on that, and I'm not gonna lie to you right now, it sounds pretty badass.
No, it wasn't at all. So there's, when I came out of college, I'll give you my backstory. We'll talk more about PQC later. But, I came out of college in 2000. It was the .com, end of the .com boom. We were in the middle of it, right? And it was right when a lot of financial fraud was happening in the publicly traded companies like WorldCom and Enron. And the SEC passed a set of regulations called Sarbanes-Oxley that were intended to safeguard financial shareholders and investors and the company and public trading, right? So that all this fraud and shareholder fraud wasn't happening anymore because people were losing all their 401k and everything vested. So that was the intent of SOX. And, I came out of that with a passion for IT and regulations, but no idea how to get engaged. And when I first came out of college, I was looking for work. I was still technical and doing programming and putting periods and commas and bleep, bloop, blop, blop, bleep, bloop, all that crap, ones and zeros. Couldn't stand it, hated it. I had a bunch of
Really?
smart kids in my class. I got my programs to compile, and I still buy them lunches today. So at the end of the day, I moved into a role that somebody recommended I take a audit role. And I wasn't quite ready to do that, but there was an entry-level SAP security administrative role. SAP is an enterprise resource planning platform that the cannabis industry can't afford and is not ready for, but is a highly robust, integrated, customizable. It's one of the world's leading, if not the leading, ERP platform in the world.
What's an ERP platform?
Enterprise resource planning. And what that means is it is a suite of modules that allows a company like Pfizer to manage all parts of their operation, from materials through sale. And it's that seed to sale. Think of it like a seed to sale. It's not really a tracking system, but it's a planning system, right?
Right.
It does everything from your APIs, your manufacturing, your finance, your procurement. And, well, maybe not procurement. There's other systems that can integrate. But it's the heartbeat of a corporate system. And when I came out of college, I was a security guy. I'm still very much a security guy, cyber and all that. And, you know, it was an opportunity to develop security roles for the organization as part of their SAP implementation and rollout. So for all the global access for Wyeth Pharmaceuticals around the world for their ERP system, you know, I was responsible for coming out of college and building that, designing the roles, making sure people didn't have inappropriate access or conflicts of interest in their access permissions. Because if you can review and approve your own work, that's bypassing a control.
Right.
That's all. That all gets down to the system level of designing access, of which when we flip it to cannabis, none of that is even stuff you have to worry about. It's all developed on the back end, and you just have to worry about assigning the roles.
Hmm.
But those roles that get assigned are basically what I was developing with the SAP security role. So nothing too sexy, but a great opportunity to understand the architecture of a multi-billion dollar organization, because that ERP system was the vein, heart, and brain of the company.
Right. Right. You know? It sounds like without it, people would just have free rein over whatever they wanted to do.
It kind of seems like they already do,
but I'm sure there's you know,
that whole process from ERP planning and corporate went from the 80s and 90s being paper-based and binders and doing everything in spreadsheets and printing stuff out in those perforated printers that have the little holes on the end. You know, that's where people, they were just killing trees. And then they moved to systems in the 90s, and those systems were very decentralized. And then in comes SAP. SAP is like, why do we have 50 systems running one company? And then you consolidate it into an ERP platform that has all that together, bundle it and sell it. So they make bank. They're the largest company in the world for ERP, I think. Them and Oracle. There's a couple of them. But, you know, it was a really good stepping stone. I hated it because it wasn't what I wanted to do. And, you know, bridging it with my audit and compliance background, my next role, somebody had recommended, you know, I was getting stale, I didn't want to do it anymore. They're like, why don't you go into an audit role? Like, who the hell grows up saying, I want to be an internal auditor? I wanted to be a comedian. I wanted to be a rock star. I wanted to be on stage. None of that ever happened. Mm. And the last thing I wanted to do was go push paper and carry binders around the world. But I'll tell you this, getting into that role, what a fantastic way to see the entire C-suite and the entire company, all operations, and from the C-suite down, from the corporate ladder, without climbing the corporate ladder, ultimately, as a 21-year-old, 25-year-old coming out of college. Then you decide where you want to go in that organization after you know all the bigwigs. You're now working, you know, I came out of college and I wasn't quite comfortable with this, but when I was doing the auditing, I'm facing off with the CFO of a multi-billion dollar organization, telling him what he's doing wrong. Right, exactly.
I'm
so,
sure.
You know, now think about that for cannabis. Think about the CRC and the inspectors that they're auditing.
Right.
And here's one of my objectives for PQC. We'll talk about it later. But at the end of the day, the people are spending way too much time and money and energy and frustration getting their license. Mm. And if you have someone like me, when I first came out of college, who was very junior, very green, didn't have a good understanding of operational risk, but was good at what he did for auditing. It's checklist oriented. Anyone could do it. But you're going to piss a lot of people off if you put somebody with no understanding of the industry or business or controls or regulations with like 1 or 2 years experience in front of somebody who just spent a couple million dollars and a bunch of years getting their operation built and up and running, writing them up for a bunch of bullshit findings. How's that going to sit? And that's what it was like in pharma, you know? So I got out of that. And moved into an operational risk management and compliance role with one intent: understand my audience. I'm writing out findings and telling people what they're doing wrong. I wanted to put myself in their shoes and understand the operations. Mm. So the first half of my career, all audits, inspections, traveling the world. I've audited every manufacturing and data center across the world for Pfizer and Wyeth. And, you know, the second half of my career was all operations, QAQC, all the regulated ops, manufacturing operations and systems. So great balance, you know, of seeing both the external audit side, facing off the FDA and all the regulators, and then, you know, internal and operational. But there's, I mean, and the need for auditors and compliance professionals in this space is unparalleled. And it's going to be the highest paying job in cannabis right now.
Wow.
And, you know, think about it. You know, you have your CEO, your COO, and your chief compliance officer. Now your CEO is going for capital and he's opening up that business, right? He's got investors to pay back. They've got investors to pay back. They're not taking a salary right away always. So your CEO position or your CCO position, your chief compliance officer, your chief quality officer, they are and should be the highest paying jobs in the cannabis industry right now because of their focus on safety and security.
Mm.
And that is the biggest concern above and beyond social. Most programs are based on two things, safety and security and social. And they're more concerned about safeguarding the public before they're concerned about giving the public opportunities. Do the foundational first, safeguard the public, and then you open up the opportunities.
Right.
So it's a great career path for people. I really enjoyed my progression from college to auditing to operations to cannabis and to apply all that. And we could talk a little bit more about this, but I want to let you talk. Kicking off an apprenticeship program and bringing on about 4 or 5 people this week, and really hell-bent on making sure that shadow apprenticeship program is defined in a way where it's mirrored off of what I walked away with when I was in auditing. So I moved into a role, very much a career path and not just a job, and it allowed me to see the entire organization from the C-suite without, you know, climbing that ladder. So I want people to have the same opportunity here. I could pay people, you know, anywhere from $20 to $50 an hour based on skill set instead of $18 an hour bud trimmers coming out of college.
Wow.
You're good. You got follow through. You're going to do the job. You can follow a checklist. You're not going to let me down. And I can train you and tell you what to do. I'll pay you $50 an hour. And let's talk about a career.
Right.
You know, this should be a master's class in New Jersey. But there's a lot. I can go on forever about that.
Right.
So
you said there was a real need for people in the, you said the free space, right? Or
there is. You mean free like labor, just pro bono work and.
Well, no. What you said, like you said, the not touching the plants, in the.
Oh yes, the ancillary. I mean, so I didn't want to go for a license, and everyone who reaches out to me, some people are cautious because they're like, "Oh, aren't you going for a license? I don't want to share anything with you." Like, no. Mm-hmm. I am structuring my company. I'm marching to the same footsteps as a company in Canada called Cannabis Compliance Inc., formed by Karina Lakowski and one of her peers, I believe out in British Columbia. Wow. Up and running for 3-4 years, grew to 72 employees and got acquired by Deloitte Canada at the triggering event of Canadian legalization. Same process. Pfizer, you know, when I was at Pfizer, that was my pitch. I said, you don't have to get in the industry. We can see who's impacted the most, patients, consumers. We're going to sponsor this organization. You know, I think that was very well received, but it was a conflict of interest. They had the second most patents in cannabis next to GW Pharma at the time. But, you know, the very next day I had pitched that in an elevator to one of their executives, and it was so well received. He's like, take a package and go build it.
Oh, shit.
So I did. And, you know, It's really just a matter of, you know, ensuring that people have outlets in the cannabis space, both plant touching and ancillary. And the ancillary space is a little harder to navigate because it tends to be more specialized. There tends to be not as much focus on it. Your resource availability, the events aren't always as focused on it, right? So, you know, the niche space is something I always, 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 always tell people to keep an eye on because no one's focused on it. And the perfect example is the medical community, and this is plant touching, but something that people aren't, not everyone's focused on. Everyone's worried about adult use and opening up the retail. The entire medical community is going to transform, especially after reimbursement kicks in and all that fun stuff. And you're going to have transdermal patches, which exist now, but more traditional hospice and hospital type of delivery mechanisms and suppositories. And who's going to champion that market once people kind of get used to the adult use and forget about the medicinal, you know? So there's a there's a really strong need here for people to not just gravitate to the marketing stuff and hey, do your website. Like that's usually like the highest volume of pivoters that I've seen, you know, is the marketers. Oh, I could do this for cannabis. I'll build your brand because it's easiest for them to pivot.
Right.
You know, for me, it was a matter of identifying the invisible space, and nobody in New Jersey and New York is doing what I'm doing. I was walking around for events for 3 years, 4 years. I've been in the legacy market for 25 years. I don't distribute, but I've been a home grower, and I've been supporting the legacy market for my entire life and will continue to support them because I think it's essential to legitimizing the industry. But I digress. Where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought.
No, it's all good. Now, I have a question, and it always gravitates. See, whenever I look into what you're doing and I read all of your posts about what you're doing, and I always get nervous, you know, because about the state of New Jersey, the state of New Jersey, because I feel a storm is coming from the state only. And hear me out here. This isn't out of the realm of possibilities, and tell me what you think, right? So the state of New Jersey has a habit of being like, oh, here's a market for small businesses and everything and whatever you could possibly think of. You start your business, you make a little bit of money and whatever, and then they let the market settle. They let all the doctrines settle. They let all the rules settle. And then they come in and they sweep up the market and they take everything. Because the state of New Jersey loves to overreach. We all know this. Yep. This isn't new. Especially on small businesses. They're actually not shy about it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Explain a little bit more about what you mean by coming in after.
What I mean is they let everything settle. Like, they let guys like you come in and set the standard. All right, this is quality and compliance according to this and this and this. And then the state of New Jersey comes in and is like, well, my data from Rutgers says that my quality and compliance data says this and this and this. So now I'm going to make it legislation. Now you have to change your law, your rules. And
no, so here's where I, here's my point or my take on that and what we're doing. I can't have that happen. So with Sarbanes-Oxley and the work I did, as I mentioned before, in 2000 through, you know, most of my career, but a lot of the Sarbanes-Oxley, I was also a GMP specialist in everything else that we do here. But SOX is a financial set of regulations that was pushed. And the entire industry had to adopt top down.
Mm.
No ability to really have, well, some input into it, but it was very much authoritative and pushed down to safeguard investors. All right, you guys want to commit fraud? Here you go. You know? And now here we are in cannabis, and we've got a very unique opportunity to shape the regs in the industry from the ground up.
Right.
And to have it be a turnkey solution. The FDA is looking for input. They've solicited input. I've provided my input to the FDA, to the various regulatory agencies in New Jersey, to CRC, Department of Health, Department of Ag, and cannabis regulatory commissions across the states, because we have an opportunity here to shape the industry. They are looking, to your point, for professionals like me to come in and tell them what to do.
Mm, right.
They don't. They don't know, and we can't have them making decisions in a silo with what they don't know. So I was very excited to come into this space and be able to contribute a lot of that. You know, Debbie Murin is the ex-medical marijuana commissioner for Maryland. She sits on my board. She's fantastic. She's a really sweet person and just will do anything for the industry. She left Maryland just, you know, she had some things with the program down there that weren't being positioned appropriately in terms of social equity and whatnot, and she left. And, you know, so I snagged her up, and she was very instrumental in helping get us in front of the CRC, working with Tricome Analytical and pushing for the 17025 accreditation that is a requirement, an ISO standard and requirement that is now in the regulations for testing labs.
Mm.
You can't open up a testing lab without getting your 17025 accreditation. Sorry, New Jersey, not sorry. Anyway, you know, at the end of the day, it's a bit of a catch-22. Because when you put regs in place like that, a lot of those standards require to validate processes. You can't validate a process till you get your hands on product.
Right.
You get your hands on product, till you get your license. So we got to get creative, and we're in this gray space, just like the rest of the market. But those regulations and the ability to push the regs and to develop them, very much hot on my radar, talking with the CRC, trying to... So if you think about the evolution of the market and what's happening with edibles, just as an example, we have a current state set of legislation regs. That is a point in time. Anyone who thinks that their compliance activities are just a point in time when you're doing your application, you're out of your mind.
Mm.
And those regs are going to change. There's going to be .1.2.A.B.I.2. That's what lawyers are for.
Right.
And I'll tell you right now, the Sarbanes-Oxley regs and any other established regulations and standards are always changing. So you're going to have a change control component that you have to interpret that into your business. But, you know, it's that space. It's that invisible space and ensuring that you can help develop standards. You know, the edible market's going to require ISO 22000. That is food safety management systems.
Mm.
Every other product that is manufactured for consumable products goes through food safety management. So that's not in the regs, just like ISO 17025 wasn't. Just like GMP auditors being a requirement for independent third parties to come in like me and to have the credentials to audit successfully. Those should be requirements. They're foundational to safeguarding the operators that are working hard to stand up their business. They're trying to do the right thing, even if they're an MSO. You know, I know we've all got our issues here, and I'll support local all day long until the craft market in New Jersey gets going. Mm. But you know, everyone's trying to do the right thing, right, wrong, or indifferent. There's people that are blocking people out of the industry. I'm not going to touch the social piece because it's out of my wheelhouse. I stay in my wheelhouse with safety and public health. So I'll support anyone and everyone who's got a commitment to delivering product to the market to ensure that the consumers and public are safeguarded. I don't care if you're an MSO. I don't care if you're a social equity applicant. If you're bringing shit in my state, if you're doing stuff in my state, I'm going to make sure I'm up your ass and you've got stuff compliantly developed and pushed out to the product or to the market. Because when it comes to public health and safety, social, I almost have to ignore it. I hate to say that because I want people in the industry, but they're two different topics.
Right.
And my here is on safeguarding public from bad operators, regardless of skin color. I don't care about skin color. I mean, I do. I want the right people in, and I want the legacy market here in New Jersey to be in before external operators. I want MSOs to be, I want the horizontal market in Jersey to form into vertical, and I want to see MSOs coming out of New Jersey. Mm. And I want to ride that way. And I want them all to be small business entrepreneurs that I've sat in a stoop with. You know, and so
that would be absolutely, that's my amazing
patch. I'm in a weird spot because I have to play nice with the states and the governments and everything, and I do support anyone and everyone, so I try and remain very independent from the industry, very unbiased. You know, I'll move the needle where I can, but yeah, that ability to have these regs put into the marketplace is going to continue to evolve, you know?
So
that's a great point that you brought up.
What would be considered unsafe or non-compliant?
Lots. So it depends on what you're talking about. Right? You can go right to packaging and labeling and making false claims. That's the easy one.
Okay,
right?
there you go.
You could, if you're, let's say you're cultivating product and you're using the inappropriate type of pesticide that's not approved, not compliant, that's part of the quality check. You know, so we think about all the quality assurance, quality control measures.
Is there a list of approved and non-approved pesticides?
Yeah. They specify within the regs what you can't use or anything outside of a designated specification.
Because
so
in I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm in pest control, and I can actually guarantee I can get rid of your spider mites or red mites or.
You do that. Are you doing anything in cannabis now for that?
No, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Okay. That was actually another question I have is if you see a future in pest control, a future for pest control yes. in cannabis, and I'll tell you how I can get rid of it. And it's with thyme oil and mint only.
Okay.
And it's an all natural organic pesticide. You know, do you think that thyme oil or any mint might be a little too aggressive on a marijuana plant, right?
It gets a little it would maybe mess up the terp profile, I don't know. But it gets a little more technical, and what I'd love to be able to do is put you in touch with half the growers I know and then just pitch what you're doing, put together a flyer. And you know, at the end of the day, pest control it's one of the biggest risks for cultivation, you know, next to diversion. And just being able to keep a clean sanitary environment is challenging with any type of botanical, herbal, gardening, right? I mean, we've all been in the greenhouses. We go get our Mother's Day flowers in a couple of weeks, right? There's bugs.
Mm-hmm.
There's bugs. They come in soil. So it's just a matter of making sure that you're following the protocols. You're not using not approved things that could be, detrimental to human health or health hazard. And a lot of that hasn't really been fleshed out. I want to see the CRC develop a director of regulatory compliance role. I'd be torn if I would take it or not. Depends on how much money I'm making now. But a role like that would, regardless of the money, would allow me to shape it from the inside out. And it would allow me to continue my conversations with the New York OCM and PA and Connecticut, because each one of those regional commissions needs a counterpart for the director of regulatory compliance. A peer of mine just took the role for the director of regulatory compliance with the New York OCM. And it was very serendipitous. I saw he went to New Paltz, which is where me and my wife went to school. And I saw GMP next to his name, and I reached out and I was like, gotta know you. And that was 3 months before he got announced as the director of regulatory compliance. I was like, that's great. Like, how serendipitous. So, you know, these people are the people that are going to bring that level of standard to the industry. And anywhere there's an ancillary control point, pesticide being one of them, right?
Mm.
There's a market for money. Anywhere where there's an ancillary control point for people coming in doing audits and inspections, there's an opportunity for money. Don't gravitate right to the networking or right to the event stuff, which everyone's doing. It's saturated. Don't go build a trade organization at this point because everyone's ahead of you. Don't go into marketing unless you really need to, and maybe just do it on the side, but find something new. Find something highly needed and find a pain point. Go after the problem statements, and you'll always hit home if you just focus on the problem statements with that invisible market, invisible money that you were talking about. So. Mm. Lots of opportunities.
So, are there a number of pests that plague marijuana plants? I heard spider mites love to eat marijuana plants. I'm sure crickets. I'm sure a number of ladybugs and Asian lady beetles would eat marijuana plants.
Actually, ladybugs are good.
Ladybugs.
I breed ladybugs. And praying mantises. And I release them all over my yard. My neighbors hate me because like, this thing was growing on my crawling on my window, and it's like a 6-inch praying mantis. And I'm like, I'm sorry,
Oh,
but they're really good for the environment. excuse me. At the end of the day, yeah, the aphids, the russet mites, there's corn earworms. There's a bunch of things, and that gets way beyond me in terms of various types. But there are natural methods to combat that. And as a home
yeah.
grower, in previous years, I stopped because play dates got a little weird when my kids' parents' friends would come over and pick up their kids, and the whole house would reek. So yeah, at the end of the day, I stopped growing. Plus, I'm in the legal market now, and I got to walk a line. And but I did it, for myself as a patient without being able to get access to strains. And when I did it, it was constant pest management because I don't. It's your own home.
I'm not going to
You're.
say it here, but I know of a way to completely get rid of all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I was using diatomaceous earth, food grade.
Yeah, that's good.
Basically. And I don't know if that's approved, but there's various methods, and state to state, people use different all natural or non all natural methods. And it's just a matter of, it brings it back to the standards. What are the standards that are needed to operate consistently, state to state? When I'd left Pfizer, my goal, my pitch was, hey, you don't have to get in the industry. We can sponsor this multi-state coalition, precision quality compliance, that's going to operate in the best interest of the patients and consumers. It's going to develop standards that don't exist across the supply chain. It's going to work in the best interest of the patients, MSOs, harmonize the standards, stand up the regs. It's all about those standards because one of the best business cases I ever read was an old Harvard business case on Fujifilm and Kodak, I believe, if I'm not butchering that too much. And just think about that. Think of film, think of VHS, think of CDs, think of Blu-ray. What do you think those are? Standards.
Right.
Set the standard, everyone follows it.
Right.
You have to in this space because it's public health. So you don't have a lot of entrepreneurial standards to set like Kodak did with film. It wasn't regulated initially, but so it's a bit of a different parallel, but you get the point.
Yeah,
You set
no, I
the
love
standard,
it.
everyone buys it, And if you miss the standard, if you miss the boat, you end up with oh God. I'm trying to draw the parallel with the what was the other Blu-ray that didn't take off? It was HD, and Blu-ray.
Yeah, HD, HD CDs, HD TV, all that HD stuff,
Thank
I
you.
guess.
That's gone.
Yeah,
That
all
went
of
away.
it.
Once people recognize the better quality and the standard and the pixels and the specifications, the actual details, which is very similar to our testing standards here, right? Draw parallel to cannabis. They gravitate towards that. It's proven, it's consistent, it gives them consistent pictures. Every picture they take with that film, they're happy. Their family looks great. Same thing with your bud. That's why I always draw a parallel to my fish tanks. Quality, procedures, implement a standard. Make sure that, I'm unhappy with the variations that's happening right now in New Jersey and the THC levels. I want my strain to be consistent. I can't even get my strain. It's Blue Dream.
You said
Freaking
you're
state cannabis.
unhappy.
Huh?
You said you're unhappy with it.
Unhappy. I mean, I love Blue Dream. I love other strains. I'll go out of state. I'll go to Maine. I'll go to Mass. I'll get what I need up there.
Right.
I'll go to the legacy market. I'll support them if they've got good strains that work for me as a medical patient. And I'll be very public about that because at the end of the day, I don't think that the legacy market, and I'm torn as a compliance guy, so anyone listening, take this at face value. But I don't think anyone in the legacy market should have to stop operating outside of, from a cultivation standpoint, people who are perfecting their trade, these are the growers that you want in the legal market. It's like asking a carpenter who's unlicensed to stop practicing his trade, for a period of time until they're ready to say yes.
Right.
So it's very similar because the stop practicing your trade is meant to safeguard people from inappropriately constructed products and falling apart on them when they're inside their house. But the guy's only going to get good at his trade by keeping building houses. So it's this catch-22 where the market really just needs to be able to continue to operate. The black needs to transition seamlessly without being told, hey, stop making money putting food on your plate for your family. Wait in a year for the CRC to get their stuff coming through. It's not always realistic for people.
Right.
It's not. People need to eat. I get it. And, you know, I'm a big fan of supporting the transition and making sure that those people are not left behind, because let's face it, that's where I've been getting my product for the past 30 years. It's been great. Most of it, all the new growers that are trying to grow now, like, hey, I can grow. And you get the saturated crap in the market that smells like lawn clippings. Hey, check this out. What do you think? Somebody gave me bud at an event out of his pocket. It was great. No bag, no nothing. He's like, I want you to sample what I've been growing. And he gives me this band of bud. And I'm like, dude was great, man. He had this big hippie beard. And he's like, just take this home with you. I'm like, just go get a bag. Like, can you give me a bag? But that's the stuff that I love. And I love when people are like, hey, I've been doing this in the state for 30 years. I probably bought product off the guy when I was younger. I don't know. Who knows? And I just think that that needs to carry forward. And rapidly before people are boxed out.
How do you mean boxed out? Boxed out by
other players? Price tag, by MSOs. You know, my entire business, you know, from a quality compliance perspective, we've got a top down, bottom up, middle tier strategy for industry engagement. The top down, simple. It's our audits and assessments, doing them on behalf of insurance companies or VCs. How do we safeguard your risk or your investment? How do we reduce your risk? Let us audit your operators that you're providing coverage for or providing money to. And then we do that quarterly before the state comes in. The bottom tier is helping the operators get up and running, right? Mm-hmm. Get their licensing and everything. The middle tier is all academic and traditional institutions, but there's a need to evolve the services on the there's just a lack of I guess linear continuity, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
When I say linear continuity, I mean that from going from left to right. We're not talking, I can't use my hands when we're not on screen here, but got the application process. People get through that, the good operations. People get through that. They're in a state of inspection readiness and ready for audits. So three phases to your operations: application, operations, inspection readiness. My company thrives, and our core services are helping people set up operations and get to a state of inspection readiness. I want to audit the entire state, inspect the entire state in advance of the CRC coming in. So you know what you're doing wrong before they knock on your door. Right. That's my business. Wow. Industry is not ready yet, so I have to do a lot of hand-holding and have worked for free for 4 years because I don't want to bring it back to the boxing out. I don't want people to be boxed out of the application rounds. And I mean, I committed to writing people's applications in 2018 when I was pivoting. And I'm still doing it now at my busiest time, now that it's hot and heavy and they need it. So that's my way of giving back, the social piece. I'll work for free. I've been working for free for years. I'm going to make sure I kick off this apprentice program and this shadow program to train the black market and the college students and everybody coming in.
That is awesome. You know, I just want to point out that is awesome that you're doing something like that.
Mm. Yes. So I've been trying to do this forever because my biggest thing with the workforce is people are grasping at straws. And they're coming to me, which is great, but they shouldn't have to just say, hey, can you do this? I need a guy. I need a girl. That goes away in 5 years. And when I say I don't want people boxed out, I want the price tag for entry for an application, mainly for a retail. It should be no different than a liquor store. You don't need me. You don't need security. You need your insurance, your legal, and your accounting. You know, and that's how you open up a liquor store. You don't need all this other crap. So in 5 years, that price tag for applications eventually sunsets. People were paying $150,000, $200,000, $1 million to get applications. Now it's down to $80,000 to $250,000, depending on what you're doing. And I really want to see people not have to pay more than $10,000. And that's kind of where I see us needing to be with reducing barrier to entry. That's what I meant by that. And, you know, I anything I can do in the application space to help people get over that barrier to entry, I will do all day long. Because for me, selfishly, the more people that get into operations, I'll make money when you make money. I got to make a little money now during the application round, but I hate the application round. I just, there's so many negative optics in it. There's so much politics in it. It doesn't get down to the core service of developing quality product. It's a commitment to develop quality product, which is why I'm involved, because I need you to commit to it and have a plan. But getting down into operations is where I thrive. So
what type of negative optics are involved in something like that?
In which part of it?
You just said
that. While you rephrase your question.
Well, I'm sorry. Oh, no. No, you're good. You said that there was some negative optics involved in the process.
Yeah. You know, in the negative optics are really just, you know,
in the application processes, or
just the application process. A lot of people are being pinned against each other. A lot of, you know, the women-owned businesses and the black-owned businesses and the Hispanic.
It's creating this
League of Nations, if you will, this United Nations of independent, siloed entrepreneurs that are, I'm going to build a women team. I'm going to build an all-black team.
Right.
And what it's doing, and I get it, especially in the black community and in the brown community, and Latin community as well, equally, you know, there's that camaraderie, you know, let's band together. Let's get over this bar. And that's great. But, you know, just the pressure being put on the market to get in as a black entrepreneur and to make sure that the CRC lets people in a first market advantage, there's strength in numbers there. And just organically, it's kind of creating this dynamic where the veterans are sticking with the veterans, the women are building their own women's businesses. And then you get the veteran black women who are doing it all and check all the boxes.
Right.
But I just hate how it's sort of created a divide in the community. And, you know, I'm hoping that the camaraderie, the buddy-buddy nature, and just the niceness of everyone's accessibility doesn't go away because of the application rounds where everyone just pisses each other off. That's why I don't like them.
It really does seem like everyone's holding their cards a little too close to their chest, right?
You have to. Totally get it. And then when you open up, once you get your license, now it's time to do business. So if you're a cultivator, if you're a retailer, you need to know every manufacturer and cultivator in the state.
Right.
If you aren't making those connections, I don't know what you're doing. So your biggest risk is those people coming online who are going to be growing product. You're going to have to manage your supply chain. That's your biggest risk, and whether or not they're going to follow through. But I do want to make sure that, and I really love the idea of the horizontal market eventually consolidating into MSOs and verticals coming out of New Jersey. And, you know, I know we have restrictions on consolidation for a period of time. That's meant for, as a safeguard. But name one reputable New Jersey MSO. Reputable. Right.
I can't.
Is there one?
I'm not sure. You would know before I did. I'll tell you that much.
And I honestly, the market's moving so fast now that it's just in this point of absolute chaos and turmoil. Because I'll be quite honest, I can't keep up with my DMs, and I'm getting 2-3 clients a week. I locked up 20 clients since January, 15 more pending, and I have not even followed up with everyone who's been announced.
Wow.
Which is my wheelhouse, because they're starting operations. They're past the application round. You know what I mean? Talking about what I was saying before about hating the application round.
Right.
So that's my target market. And I'm bringing on about 5 people this week, actually. I reached out to Stockton, and I actually went the reverse route. I came across a girl who's graduating from Stockton, because I've been looking for some help in offloading social media and some stuff. she's fantastic. And within like less than 8 hours, she already got, you know, I'm already talking with Stockton, but she had reached out to them. She's a self-starter, took the initiative, wants to get in the industry. I want to pay her well. I want her to be a beacon of how high of a paying job this can be if you bust your ass in compliance. And she's getting me like 3 or 4 interns from Stockton, which I didn't really know was as informal of a program. I thought I had to build the program. They have the program and they just need me to sign a paper to get the kids college credits. So I want to train the workforce coming out of the colleges. I want to build the curriculums for the colleges, and I want to train the black market so that everyone and anyone knows what's expected of them from a compliance perspective, and they can make $80,000 coming out of college.
Wow.
Because I didn't get to make that. Fuck it. Let's make sure some people have. That's generational. You know, we're all screaming social equity. We're all screaming generational wealth. And that's great if you're an entrepreneur and you're building your business, but your business can go out of shit tomorrow, you know, and close doors tomorrow. And then what? Your kids are going to go do something else. There's no generational wealth. Generational is getting this into the traditional institutions, getting it to be a career path and not a job. Getting away from the harvesting and bud trimming, which is quite honest, and I hate to say it, slave labor. And we're all, you know, it's smoke and mirrors because it's a $15 an hour job. We're talking about social equity, kids coming out of college. You're not going to pay off your college debt with a $15 an hour job. Are you kidding me? You may as well go back to, it's going to push people to the black market. I would start selling bud again, or I would do it on the side. So at the end of the day, you know, it's a matter of keeping people happy and keeping people engaged in the market and giving people the pieces of the market that they need to thrive and making sure that the regs complement. That's it, you know, at a high level. Sounds simple.
Yeah, it sounds simple.
JT for president. No, I don't want that job. Even if they did open up the director of regulatory compliance role, which I'm pushing for, I don't know if I would want that. Just think of all the headaches that come with it and stress. And I would very much love to put somebody in that position and send them a list of 10 people that do what I need them to do for this industry and what the industry needs them to do. So we'll see where it goes, but I'm very happy that the CRC, I, you know, honestly, I'm in a position where I have to play nice with everyone, black market, legal market, CRC, cops, everyone, my wife. So at the end of the day, you know, I do think we did an okay job with the regs. It's a hard job, and I never want to be in politics. So I applaud anyone who's trying. And I applaud everyone who's gotten us this far, because when I was in Pfizer, it was 100,000 people that I felt like I had to please. It's really hard to make everybody happy. It's really hard. And it's not 100,000 people. It's 8 million people in New Jersey.
Yep.
A million people in New Jersey. And it's like running for president of the United States. We get these two assholes to pick from as a country of 350 million people. I'm like, these are my two options? This is not statistically reasonable of a selection for me. Where's the rest? You know, I want like 5 options, but then you can get a president with 20% of them.
There are technically other options, but you know.
That just the way the market, the way the system is rigged. You know, it's just there needs to be, you get it. You
see, everybody on the outside of politics, When they don't understand it, everyone thinks it's just rah-rah red team, rah-rah blue team, when it's really some ridiculously boring shit.
Yeah, I never want to be in politics. I've seen people go in. I've seen Scott Rutter go in. He infamously and notoriously announces himself as a politician in recovery. And it's been 3 years and he's still saying that shit. And you know, anyone who's friends with them is who's been a politician says the same thing. And I'm just like, I look at my neighbor, my mayor in my town who I'm friends with, and how often he is defending shit on Facebook, and that noise of like, why does our town look like shit? You know, whatever. That gets magnified to the CRC. You know, picture a mayor hearing from a town of 15,000 people and trying to keep them happy as a mayor. And then you had this team of 6 now grown to 57, which I still think doesn't have the right mix of people. And it's year one. So we need to give them a little time. Right. We need to give the industry time. They're doing their best. And I think they're doing a good job. I think that the market with some of their complaints are absolutely valid. And that does need to be addressed as well, you know? And so you got to keep people happy. You got to throw people bones, and you got to maintain optics. And I hate to say that coming out of corporate, because that's why I left. I fucking hated optics. Excuse my language. But, you know, you have to put on this fake smile in corporate.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I don't have to do working for myself.
There you go.
And but you still need to play ball. You still need to lobby. You still need to worry about optics, because it's a different type of optics. It's not, hey, are you working hard and getting your job done? It's, how are you engaging and what are you doing? So I had somebody, let's talk about this real quick. Can I go off on a tangent?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Because I was going to post this and I don't want to post it. And this is a perfect example for me to way for me to vent.
Go for it.
So I opened my profile up on Instagram to public. Stupid. And I've just been getting rid of all the spam plugs and everything. I'm like, stop. And this one woman's been following me for the past 5 weeks. Nice lady, 30, millennial, New Jersey. Looks like she came from Vermont. And I post a picture, and my Instagram page is fairly colorful. You know, I've got my family, my pets, my friend, and my my engagement with the industry. And I post a picture from an event over in Morristown, and it's just like four or five white people that I was just talking to. So I said, let's take a picture. And they're all my peers and people who helped me and always offer advice. So it's just a thank you post, right? She goes, karate looks great, but there's a melatonin problem in this picture.
Oh, no.
What do you want me to do? Grab the nearest black eye and pull him into the picture?
Oh, boy.
And I wrote that. And I'll tell anyone that. I'll be very clear that I'm not going to just support black for the purpose of supporting black. I'll support anyone who's got passion, entrepreneurial drive, and preferably if they're black and have all that, they have my vote all day long. So, you know, at the end of the day, and you know, people of color, you know, that you have to have the passion. It's 50%, right? It's, you don't just get a meal ticket because you're a person of color. And I'll help anyone, white, black, brown, Puerto Rican, yellow, or Haitian, to put it in Fife Dog's terms from I think that's a tribe song. You know, as long as you have that passion and you're not an asshole and you're focused on good product quality, you're focused on supporting the local community, just do it for the right reasons. That's what it really boils down to. And don't piss people off. Don't be an asshole. You do that, you'll be fine in this industry.
I'll be honest with you. Excuse me. I'll be honest with you. That's one of the reasons why I asked you to come on Cushion Coffee, is that because I'm watching your stories and your posts and your energy is, you've definitely overcome some adversity and come out on top. And
thank you.
It's not easy to do that. It's really not.
No, and my wife gets all the credit for that, because she's the one who pushed me to overcome everything. And anytime I get frustrated, I just was yelling this morning about some shit. And, you know, I just need to keep reminding myself that they're just the backbone.
Right. So the people
stay humble,
who are
stay the, driven,
the people who are assigned to you in life are absolutely important. However, it's equally as important to know that where she drove you to do it, you did it. You didn't have to do it. So she has credit where you have credit as well. So
yeah.
There,
I don't accept praise well, so I always default to her.
No, I understand. Absolutely. But you can't discredit yourself, because it doesn't matter who's driving you. You know that if you're not willing to listen, you're not going to. So it takes strength and self-discipline and knowing oneself and knowing your enemy in order to do something like that.
Absolutely.
So
you know, you have to I never had a filter. I'm from Jersey.
Yeah. Jersey bred, born in Jersey.
Jersey born, bred, grew up in Oakland, grew up in Patterson for a little bit, then Hawthorne, then Oakland, Lincoln Park, Midland Park, Lodi, East Rutherford, settled down in Springfield now. But yeah, born and bred, and hell bent on making sure that this industry is where I wanted to see it 30 years ago when I was growing up. And, back to my wife and everything, they're just absolutely, you know, the backbone of everything that not just me, any person who you see posting, there's 10 people behind them and watching their kids and cooking their dinner and bring them coffee when they're sitting at their computer till 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, and it's, that can't go unnoticed for this industry, because this industry wouldn't be built without any of that. So the people behind anyone who you see on social, you know, and I get really, I bringing it back to this person that commented, I was kind of like really heartbroken. I was kind of like teary eyed and I lost sleep. I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning on the one night where I just wanted to chill with my wife. And this person just told me I didn't have enough color on my page. And one, you don't know me. You don't. Two, I looked at her page, blonde, white, sunsets, blonde hair mom, blonde hair sister, white. White dad, St. Patty's Day pictures. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, you know, nothing wrong. Listen, everyone's got multiple pages. Maybe she got a different page. I don't know her. I'm not going to talk anything, but just don't use other people's platforms to promote your own personal agenda. I'll say what somebody should have said to the woman who complained in Missouri to the FCC when she heard fuck, shit, bitch, and all the seven words you can't say on television. I love George Carlin. He's my He raised me. But change the goddamn channel.
Yes.
Don't listen. Freedom of speech. And, you know, it's not even like I had anything negative to say. I was just saying thank you to people that were awesome. And so I don't know. People are good and bad. People are toxic and people are value added. And I gravitate to the people who are just unwavering from a commitment and integrity standpoint and have the follow through. And I don't care who you are, as long as you have that drive. And you're not going to let me down or your customers down or the state or anyone. That's it.
Yeah, I feel like the general ability to follow through is rapidly diminishing.
It's a great point. And one of my assumptions coming into this industry, I didn't prepare well for this, was the lack of formality. I just posted this on LinkedIn, actually. You can go read it. I had to unlearn a lot of the formality. And this was some advice that was given to me by an old mentor of mine, Jane Wilshire at Pfizer. Really, really smart woman. Powerhouse player up there, doing a lot of the merger and acquisition and transformational activities. Not sure where she's at now, but she said something to me once when I was talking about her getting into some of the merger and acquisition work I was doing. She's like, the M&A space, you got to unlearn everything that you know from compliance. It's fast. It's dynamic. It's working off assumptions. It's gray space. It's not black and white. And it was probably the most important piece of advice that I realized I had gotten about a year ago. I never thought about it. That was adding a lot of value to what I'm doing now, because stepping into this market, I didn't have the formality. There wasn't the resources. The people don't have the resources. And I had an expectation that people operated consistently with how I was used to operating day to day while in corporate. I'll set up a meeting and we'll get that on calendar for Monday. No show. These people don't have calendars. Legacy market. You know what I mean? Right. So that expectation, this goes back to me drinking and staying sober. Part of that was getting rid of expectations of people. Really helps. But it's also very much something that you want to be conscious of, because you have the mom and pops to the MSOs to the Bruce Littons. And you have all these people pivoting from different points in life, different backgrounds, different cultures, different educations. There's no one piece of standardized anything in this industry. So we all need to be cognizant of where people are coming from. That's it.
No, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. That also in turn, and at the same time, I agree with you. I don't feel like you should get an advantage because the social, I don't know, social eye, the social court.
It's not a handout. There's still work to be done, guys, and that's it, you know. And anyone who works hard, that just work hard, just do the job, do what's required. And you know, the formality though, you know, I had to unlearn everything: the project management, the meeting cadence, the scheduling, the status meetings. I get some of that with the labs because they're much more scientific and, you know, detail oriented testing, and they have that formality. But the retail market is very different. It's culture oriented. and there's a lot of hand-holding I need to do, because if I do my job right, that formality will be there by the end of the year and before these people open up.
Right.
So, you know, get meeting cadences scheduled with your team once a week as you're launching and for operational ready. Manage it like a project. And even the application, the reason I hate the application so much, I'm a quality professional that's designed quality management systems for multi-billion dollar manufacturing facilities over the world. We start with the top. We start with the quality policy, and we have a team that's writing all the sections of the quality management system, which are security, safety, records management, everything that's required for SOPs in New Jersey, right? Mm-hmm. Plus some. And it's very much a top-down driven approach, but when you write in a silo, and if somebody calls me and says, I just need you to write one SOP, but I have no visibility how into the rest of your SOPs are structured because they're all correlated. Adverse event, if you have an adverse event, you gotta update your inventory. That means you gotta reference your inventory SOP. It calls references, all your SOPs are matrixed. And to do it in a silo has been a challenge for me, because it doesn't add a lot of quality to your operation or guarantee consistency in product, because you have 3, 4, or 5 different contractors on your application writing those sections. One guy's doing security, one guy's doing this. And that's, I like staying in my lane. So my ideal situation is having 2 contractors on it, somebody focusing on security and safety, or security and inventory and record keeping, which is half of it. And I do the adverse events, the recall, testing, QA, packaging, labeling. I stay in my wheelhouse. And that way I can work very closely with someone in designing the entire control system. But people are operating like to your point, keeping their cards close to their chest. They don't want to share a lot. And it's extremely difficult to build a compliance process for somebody when you don't want to share what your business is doing or who's on, or what, how the other contractors are writing their sections that I need to reference. It's not gonna jive, and it's not a good way of doing it. So that project management office almost for the application rounds, pulling people together, getting them, here's what everyone's working on, here's his list, here's your checklist, we're gonna meet once a week, gonna have a status readout of where people are at. If somebody needs help with a section of their SOP and there's a dependency on the quality control SOP, let's get those 2 people talking so that we have the SOP designed appropriately and it's referenced appropriately. That level of formality doesn't exist. That was a false expectation for me.
Right.
False. Wrapping it up there. But
no, so yeah. I have a question here real quick. I have a question. Yeah. In a world with no doctrine, paired with a world with people that generally don't have any self-discipline, self-awareness, or emotional intelligence, how does that challenge you in motivating people to do the things that they need to do in order to?
It doesn't, and I'll say this, because I don't mind explaining what I do. I'm here to educate. I'm here to tell people how to do this and how to be compliant and how to audit themselves and get self-sufficient.
Mm.
And in Pfizer, I felt very much passed over, very unneeded, because a lot of those resources exist. And now when people come to me and they want that stuff, it just feels like value to them. So I'll spend all the time in the world making sure people have that understanding. They know what's needed. My preference, like when you're thinking of doing something, call me. And advice is always free. What I want to do for you is give you a 1-page slide that outlines your next 12 to 24 months and each of the compliance potential triggers that you need to keep on your radar. The edible ISO 22000 or the edible market just in general should be a milestone. Because now when that kicks in and you have a retail market and now you're stocking your shelves with edible products and anything else that comes to beverages, then your inventory changes. Your risk profile changes. You're now carrying new products that are new to the market based on new regulations. So you need to update your retail procedures to ensure that you're auditing those suppliers and vendors appropriately. There's just so much. And the real key factor for anyone to thrive in this space is to roll with the punches, keep learning, never stop learning, never stop being trainable, never stop being teachable. and just be open. Don't be condescending and don't be an asshole. And I'm here to learn from everyone that I speak with. It's a two-way street. I'll teach you about compliance. I want to know about what you're doing and how I can help and other areas I just don't know, because this industry is so new for everyone, even the legacy growers. I don't care if you've been in this industry for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, since the 60s, the industry is still new for everybody. And even if you think you know it all, you don't know the formalities of the new industry, and you don't know where it's going to be in the future. So we just need to keep an open mind. We all need to work together, and we need to make it turnkey so that when the FDA comes in, we as an industry are like, yeah, we're ready for you, FDA. Not as a company, I think I'm ready for you, FDA.
Right.
I want the industry ready. And that's my marching orders.
Yeah, I wanted to go backwards here a little bit. You mentioned inspections, and I wanted to go over, if you know, exactly what you're looking for when you physically inspect a marijuana plant.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'll take a sip of water.
No, you're all good.
The inspections piece is my bread and butter and where I am going to have the most consistent, repeatable revenue, right? Because it's reoccurring. When we go in, it's a matter of establishing a baseline of looking for everything the CRC is going to look for. So in my career as an auditor, inspector, and facing off with the FDA and the big four, PwC, and all the external auditors that come in, KPMG, EY, Deloitte, you know, it's a matter of knowing what they expect to see and how that audit is going to be facilitated. Most people have never been through an audit. When you walk in or an inspector comes in for an surprised announcement, or unannounced inspection, surprised announcement. It doesn't even make sense. That's like an oxymoron. you know, at the end of the day, you need your process for handling that inspection. I'm surprised the CRC didn't require having a formal process to support their inspectors when they come walking through the door. Who does what we need from you. Set the table, set the bar for what you're expecting from people. What I expect from people when I contract with people is very clear. You know, I'll say I'm going to come in. I'm going to do one of two things. If you're operational, it's a site review. It's a depending on what part of the supply chain you're in, from cultivation, manufacturing, testing lab, or retail. We're going to come in and we're going to evaluate your entire site, all the environmental and physical controls. Mm. We're going to do all the paperwork controls and all the documentation of the record keeping and inventory. We're going to make sure that every regulation that is required of you as per New Jersey regs and above New Jersey regs, if you're committing yourself to ISO standards and GMP standards, that you implement all those and that they've been implemented accordingly. And more importantly, are maintained and consistently maintained. Because anything done at a point in time for quality is just a point in time, unless you're going to follow through and maintain it. So, you know, these companies that have roadmaps and the ability to say, here's where the market will be next year, and this is when we need to file the application for expansion. We're restricted to expanding to this license type until then. And, you know, knowing what you're going to do is going to allow you to run a compliant operation. It's going to keep you organized. When I come in, you know, it's typically a 3-day process depending on volume of SKUs and size of the company. But I'll give you an example of what we're doing for micros. The micros are restricted to 10 people, right? Small op. Micros are very much the craft market and the legacy market with a lot less formality than the MSOs, right? Not a lot of audit or inspection management experience or quality management experience. Very much oriented in growing, cultivation, retail, selling, distribution, the fun culture stuff. Let us manage that for you. So we are doing this for a couple of clients. I just kicked it off earlier this year. But I want to, you know, really support the entire market by providing external third-party audits and inspections in advance of the state come in. So the whole motto is don't wait for the state, because they're going to come in once a year. You get to schedule that first inspection, which is great. But they're going to come in once a year, and then ultimately maybe that. If you look at New York, New York had 713 hemp inspections for two auditors last year.
Wow.
That's two per day. An audit takes a week. That's not realistic. And how effective and efficient are those audits? So, you know, when we come in, it's a three-day process. We do this, you know, for the micros, we offer a outsourced service where we do all their auditing. It allows you to tell the CRC that you have an independent third-party audit function doing your audits and assessments, reporting independently, not hiding anything, so they have full transparency and independence. You save half the headcount on the staff because, you know, for a compliance position, you should really be paying somebody $60,000 to $75,000 per year, starting. And if I can cut that in half to $35,000, great. So, you know, $3,500 a month, 12 audits a month, two are free, $35,000 a year, bundled, packaged, reported, transparency of the CRC, and you have an opportunity to correct and fix everything and do continuous improvement. So, and that's all operations. So for manufacturing, retail, testing, you know, depending on what you're doing, we come in, the facility, the site, the equipment, the calibration of the equipment, your methodologies, your interaction with the supply chain and those processes for vendor supplier evaluations. It's end to end from the second you open your door and everything that falls into your operation, and just ensuring that you're documenting everything and everything's in a state of inspection readiness, stored, version controlled, has integrity. People can't tamper with evidence that's, you know, any logs or audit files or anything like that. So I always recommend people move to systematic solutions and quality management solutions so they can implement access controls like we were talking about before for SAP.
Right.
That's what I did. And, you know, then you have less risk. Take away the risk little by little, whether it be systems, maturity, an SOP, training. Start chipping away each area of risk that applies to your business and put a mitigating factor in place. And the more you do that, you're great. So that's really what we help with people do, is make sure they don't have any gaps. We make sure that they have all their regulations in line. Their SOPs are written effectively and efficiently. The staff is being trained and operating flawlessly. And then everyone's really just in that point of inspection readiness to, you know, we'll sample the documentation, the audit logs, to make sure that they're executing. So the audit is really two things: design effectiveness and operating effectiveness. Design is everything you put into your application. Operating is everything that you execute. And then in the operating space, we sample to see how well you're executing based on a probability matrix or a sampling matrix. Based on volume of transactions and things of that nature. So there's a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I don't mean to talk so much about it. But
No, you're good. No, that's what I brought you here for. Absolutely. All of that energy. Need that. Love it.
Right on.
Absolutely. But your experience as a grower and as a user advocate, I'm sure all of that helps you. lived experience, absolutely. So when you're inspecting, say, on-site marijuana plants, what are some, I don't know, bad quality things that you're looking for, like dead leaves or rotted plants? Sure. Or I'm not entirely, you know, as a...
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, it's the cleanliness and the sanitation of the environment. Like, when I walk into a facility, you know, life science and or cannabis or food and beverage, anything,
right?
It's kind of spotless, you know. And the guy got his booties on, his little hairnet over his beard and his head, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, you can't have, you know, Jane or Joe with their beanies hanging all over your hair, in your bud. Right. But when I walk in, it's a matter of making sure that the facility's clean. I recognize that the staff seems to be operating with a level of formality and consistency. You can tell just by looking at them that they're following procedures. That's superficial on the surface, but
right,
you know, on the surface level, we observe, you know, cadences for security doors and how people are engaging. When we get into the facility, we evaluate the flow of the facility and ensure that there's no cross-contamination, that the, you know, the plants are being cared for appropriately, the humidity controls and all the environmental controls there. Obviously you can detect and get up close and personal and look for bugs and whatnot, pests. And then, looking at the other materials, the things that they keep in the storage closet for cleaning procedures or for nutrients and things that they actually use for cultivation or manufacturing, any other chemicals or products that are used in the manufacturing process, and agents for extraction. distraction too. We're extracting so we can get distracted.
Yes. Right? There you go.
Extraction, distraction. I love that. That's a great name. It's a matter. I mean, I can look at a bud from the black market when someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, what do you think of this?" And I can give it a 7-point quality check. I'll check the. I carry a little magnifying glass in my back pocket, because I'll get up close. I'll look at the trichomes. I'll see if you harvested it at the appropriate time. I'll be able to tell if your harvest times are appropriate. I can smell it and tell if you flushed appropriately to get all the crap out of there before harvesting.
Now, what is that? What is flushing?
Flushing means, and everyone's got different methodologies and procedures, but as a home grower, I was very adamant about making sure that, any residual nutrients or any products I was using that would affect taste, terp profile, or anything during the curing process, you want that flushed out of the root systems. So when you, depending on if you're doing like hydroponics and everything and soil based, there's different methods to do this, but you just want to flush it with, some water and get all that out for, a period of time before harvest, and just let it run its way through the stems and the plants of the pre-harvest bud. But that's what I used to do. So when I would harvest it, it would actually have less of that noxious smell to it. Doesn't dry and cure smelling like, grass clippings that just are sitting in a brown bag in your shed. I got some bud that smelled horrible the other day. I was like, whoa, this is like, would you keep this in like a sock bag? It was horrible. So there's things that you can just very superficially check for, as we all do as, connoisseurs or gungeoneers, whatever you want to call yourself.
I love it.
Superficial check, the sniff test, if you will, is a very quick way for me to say, you know what you're doing, you don't. And then we get into, so whenever somebody comes up to me and offers me free bud, I'm always like, hey, let's see where you're going.
So what
then it's a conversation starter.
What type of smells would be off-putting to you? I mean, besides the grass clippings, that's understandable. But
besides what?
I mean, besides the grass clipping smell, I understand that. However, say it smells like cat piss haze. Say it smells like too much like cat piss. You know what I'm saying?
Well, a lot of this comes down to the standards, right?
Right.
And if you have a specific terp profile for a plant, and your seeds are auto flowering, and all your genetics, your inputs and your outputs have to match. What are you expecting that to look like? And does it, everyone's got different terp profiles and all that. And, what are you expecting the final product to look like, and how far away from that is it? That's really what it boils down to. The various smells, I don't want to get into that because I got some bud right here that just smells straight up like garlic. It's this garlic something or other. It's fantastic. I gave it to my wife. I'm like, she's like, I cook with that? I'm like, no.
You said garlic, like straight up garlic?
I don't know. It's upstairs.
Holy shit.
Picked up some bud. And there's a peanut butter crunch. Doesn't quite smell like peanut butter. And then there's a garlic one. So, when you think about these stupid names, I hate the names because it's so bred out and everybody wants their own strain and wants a patent on it now. Like, oh, I could patent my strain. Yeah. You ever hear of GMO?
Yeah.
That's what Hillview Med. They had a patent for basil. That was the app that I was on in 2019. Very light touch. They brought me in at the 11th hour just to review, some QA procedures. But I had very little to say because they were in a good position. But they had a patent for basil, and they still do. And they own like maybe 9 to 13 nurseries across the country. So, the profiling of plants is not being done consistently. I'd love to see a master repository of database, a strain database put together by somebody. I don't know if that's out there, but to me, that would be a foundational element for helping baseline some of the strain standards, because they're getting very convoluted and crossbred, and consistency doesn't come from everyone trying to grow their own strain. Got enough strains that work for people. Let's stick with the OG strains. And then let the craft market start, you know, and the black market start, continue to do that. But for medical, and there needs to be, you know, the traditional name strains. You know, where's my Blue Dream? Where's my Jack?
Right, right.
You know, where's my Maui Wowie? Jesus. I mean, I missed college when I was in high school and college. And the reason is because the buds I got then came from three places, Vermont, British Columbia, or... Newark, which was probably Mexican weed. It was all Brick City weed. You know,
in like Newark. Patterson,
buddy, my stems and my seeds and
right.
chocolate hot bags and all that. But that, you know, when the market was 20 years ago in the market, there was less people saying, I can do this, I can grow, including myself. I was just growing for myself. But now people are doing it and distributing, and everyone thinks they can grow, or everyone's trying to grow, trying to perfect their craft in advance of this and prep for this. Totally fine, that's the entrepreneurial dream, but it does affect the black market quality, where I'm not even getting consistency in black market, whereas 20 years ago I haven't even used the word dank for bud in like 4 years. Yeah. And now I'm in the fucking industry, excuse my language again, but you know, I want to be smoking nothing but fire, and if every other bag that comes to me is like, what do you know what I do, I'm the quality guy. Don't sell me some shit. I say that to everyone. I'm like, before I open this, I'm not gonna be happy.
Holy shit, that's fucking hilarious. I didn't even think about that. Imagine handing the quality guy some fucking weed.
I very much use that to my advantage to make sure I get the best of the best, selfishly. But if you're trying to show me what you're gonna grow and you're gonna put some fucking shit product in front of me, I'm not gonna be. I mean, aside from if you're just staying in the black market, fine, cool. But, you know, I'm not putting my faith behind your brand in the above ground. So, whatever. I mean, everyone's learning, and that's half the fun. And it's really exciting to see people trying. And because I grew, I'm 42 years old. I've got years of experience. You're younger. Other people are younger. Younger people want to do this, and they haven't had that opportunity to grow in their closet yet, you know? And so... I'm very cognizant. Everyone's at a different point in time. I'll never box anyone out. I'll never talk shit about somebody. I just think that everyone needs an opportunity in this industry and just needs a stepping stone loaded with resources. That's it. So
absolutely.
To the point where you can't even step on the stepping stone. It's just, you're going to fall over if you step on all those resources. That's what I want people to have. You know?
So
that's why I had the incubator. I don't know if I told you about the grassroots collaboration group.
You touched briefly on it. I think you told me about the story. Yeah. How you accidentally gave the wrong question.
But it was a passion, and it got, you know, I didn't get to build the $2 billion residential complex in Jersey City overlooking New York, better view of New York than New York had of itself, working with the, you know, there's the old Conrail stations and Hoboken Brownstone Company, and they were trying to do some stuff there with developing this, and they wanted to be like Green Street, Gary Vee's Green Street out on the West Coast. 67,000 square feet, you know, residential complex surrounding it. And you live there, it's like a real world with millennials and startups, with gym. Getting some feedback, and I don't know if you hear that.
With millennials and Starbucks, I love it.
Yeah, no, just, you know, put a high-tech incubator co-work in the middle of this, and your gym, your restaurant, your art gallery, and all your, it's a one-stop shop. And that was February, right before COVID. And a bit of a blessing in disguise, because I'd be stuck with that commercial real estate.
Yeesh.
So, yeah, or a development project that would be waiting to break ground, whatever.
So I interviewed someone not so long ago about cannabinoid facts, and it looks kind of similar to the nutritional facts on food products. Are you familiar with this? Have you ever seen this before?
Yeah.
Are you pushing for that?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
Are you pushing for something like that?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, when you think about Let's talk about CBD. CBD is still restricted from being promoted as having a, you know, certain health effects and benefits. And that's going to change. It's going to be a nutri-supplement. You know?
Right.
It's going to have to go. It's going to be a vitamin, a multivitamin. People are trying to take CBD waiting for an effect after taking it once. It's like taking a Centrum. It replenishes your, you know, endocannabinoid. And I'm just annoyed when I say it. It's the one word in the industry I can't pronounce. It's funny. I had a team member that couldn't say THC. It was always HTC.
Shit.
So we all got some, you know, dyslexia going on over here. But whatever the case. I forgot my thought. But they, yeah, that word throws me off every time.
No, you're good.
The packaging, the actual consumer brand and medical brand evolution of what people can make claims on and the insurance reimbursement, is the whole process is going to change. You know, I think that the ability to infuse the science and the claims, and which all the research, we have the research. You know, it's going to be annoying when they say, oh, we got to do some more research. You don't need research. You need efficacy testing, and you need adverse event testing with other medications. That if you're a pharmaceutical company and your people are taking products, we should be testing cannabis in combination with those products and documenting the results. That's where we need to be. That's the only thing that hasn't really happened yet. We don't need to evaluate the benefits of cannabis. We're past that. We know how it interacts with the body, you know? So I need to see a lot of the industry start focusing on efficacy testing, clinical trials for the medical community. I'm not saying we need to do that for everything in adult use, but where there's true medical need and you've got people dying on a deathbed and you're more severe patient, there absolutely needs to be a higher level of scrutiny and reliance and consistency beyond the G13 that used to come out of University of Missouri. Is that where it came from? University of Missouri? I think that's where they grew it, right?
I have no idea.
G13 is back when it was like the government strain of cannabis. That was the only one that was grown. So whenever I'd get excited and somebody would come to me like, this is G13, man.
Meanwhile, oh, yeah. You know, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Meanwhile, it was never G13 because I've never got my hands on it in when I wasn't 14, when I was older and I had more resources. So there's no way it's G13. Anyway.
There's a number of cannabinoids that are now starting to boast the ability to have antibacterial features. Have you ever heard of this? Does this have any validity to it?
So it does get a little out of my wheelhouse. I have somebody that would be great for your show to talk to on this. If you know Gaetano.
I don't.
The guy that wears a cannabis hat is always at all the events with all the buttons on his hat. Nonetheless, he's very much in this space and very highly educated in the just the cannabidiol profiling and the genetic space and the research, and probably be a really good guy to talk to.
Yeah,
you know, in that capacity. Absolutely. I try and stay in my wheelhouse, and when it gets into the science and the things that are above my pay grade, honestly, I'm not a PhD or a biochemist, but those people are absolutely critical to the supply chain. And, you know, PQC goes from research to recall. My personal level of expertise is supply chain through finance and commercialization, manufacturing, right? But the lab and the clinical trial, I have people on my team that specialize in that. I do a lot of lab work, but it's still research and clinical trial, and there's very much a scientific component of that you have to be educated on and knowledgeable on managing that. New drug discovery forms that go to the NDA, right, for application. That's going to be a process that, you know, if you're filing a new drug with the FDA and getting approval so that you can have it beyond labels and represent it as we just talked about, that process has to happen. It has to go through the federal government.
Right.
There's demonstration of data that has to accompany that, right, with your research and your trials. So there's things there that are more traditionally geared towards the life science space and very much should be handled by those traditional doctors, PhDs, microbiologists, chemists. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You know, my background is pure science. I won't go out of my wheelhouse. I'll talk to it on a podcast. But
no, I gotcha.
Totally.
It's just so interesting because, you know, you always see these new charts coming out and you do some research and then, like, you always don't ever know if what you're reading is bullshit or not anymore. But, you know, so I always like to ask questions.
And you hit the nail on the head. There is a lot of bullshit. And people are writing articles because they're running out of, well, they were running out of content over the past couple of years because of COVID. Like, shit, what do we write about today? And, you know, it becomes a lot of fluff. And you have a lot of people, and this goes to the marketing people that I feel is saturated. Love them all, but there are too many of them. You know, you have to really make sure that I lost my train of thought. That's right. You know what I'm saying. I mean, the messaging there is critical. The marketing people, when they write articles, need to be, the industry is transitioning from more generic articles to section specific,
right.
not supply chain specific, but profession specific, like me. So I spent the first, and this was a challenge for me, this is a good point, a couple of years of my life, and when I was like 0 to 5, it was really fucking hard. This is idiot. The first couple of years of my pivot here into this were really hard because of just the I don't know how I want to say it. It was a challenge from a couple different angles. The formality, as I mentioned earlier, staying in my wheelhouse. And the problem I had early on was because the people that were first to market who had the word compliance next to them were who? Lawyers, accountants, security professionals, all very much compliance. Right? Everyone's doing compliance. You can be fucking, you know, in workforce development, you still have to be compliant.
Right.
Compliance applies to everything. And I've had an uphill battle with redefining what I do as operational compliance, public safety, and getting people to understand the value of that, and they should be paying more than what they're paying for security. No offense to security people, but or equivalent. Actually, equivalent is probably a better answer because it's half the program. Safety and security, social equity. That's what the program is based on. So when you're thinking about, you know, 50% of your application, don't come to me saying, can you do it for $500? That's the price tag I view you putting on public safety.
Mm.
And I will all day long, you know, well, actually I've said yes all day long to this point because they're all friends and people who deserve it. And I've just been working for free, but I'm getting to the point where, you know, I'm bringing on 5 people, this team, I've got overhead. Just full transparency, the cost of running a compliance company, a small boutique compliance company for a year is $150,000. You know,
wow.
There's cost. My insurance is $10,000. You know, my marketing budget is $30,000. My overhead for paying people is $40,000. You know, so people need to be cognizant of the fact that not everyone is coming at this from a one-off. It's just me doing this and I don't have overhead. And I can't necessarily just accommodate the $500 price tag forever.
Right.
But I've been doing it because I've been able to absorb the work personally. Now that I'm doing more speaking engagements and things of that nature, I've got an engagement lined up for every month this throughout the year. It's great, but it's time. And I need to work with the state. I need to train the CRC. I want to work with developing the curriculums for the colleges and ensuring that the because all the colleges have just a baseline curriculum, and it needs to be a dedicated focus on public health, safety, and compliance as a master's class. All this stuff is needed, and pushing for the regs and developing the regs and standards needed, time consuming, and I can't necessarily write in SOPs and application stuff in parallel to that. So we're at a point, we're at a really good point where we're scaling up, making sure we don't drop the ball on anything, being very proactive with being engaged with my clients, training our staff, having internal policies and procedures, keeping the formality. I'm independent from the industry, and we're entirely hanging our hat on integrity and transparency. So we need to do everything by the book and make sure that we've got, you know, full internal integrity across our own procedures before I start telling people what they should do for theirs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so if there's someone listening and they want to contact you or want to talk to you somehow, how could they do that?
Yeah, no. So again, my name is Jason Thomas. I'm the founder of Precision Quality and Compliance. We are a cannabis life science company entirely focused on ensuring people have operations, compliant operations set up during the application process, your application writing, our regulatory compliance plans and SOPs. And we really transition people from operations through inspection readiness. And if they want to reach out and get in touch with us, my personal email is jason@precision-qc.com. The website is precision-qc.com. And we've got the Instagram pages, LinkedIn, Facebook. I avoid TikTok, but I got somebody kicking off a TikTok strategy for me.
Yeah.
Who's much younger than me and knows what she's doing.
No,
you'll see me on there getting no traction or followers. If just a waste of time. Who's this old guy? What's he talking about?
Right. No, I love it. I love it.
Lots of ways to contact me. You know, I hand out my cell, but I usually do that as a second step once people reach out, because I'm very much a phone call, pick up the phone and call me.
Right.
The industry is moving too fast for you and or me to wait for emails to be replied to. I'd like to make myself available at all hours of the night up until a reasonable hour, 10 o'clock or so. For people to call, email, and engage, advice is always free. And I want to make sure people reach out to me as soon as possible when you're thinking of an idea, before you go to your lawyer. I'll help you structure your business plan and get everything where you need to at a low cost. You know, don't break the bank. You know, that this is something that it's your business. You're going to have to own it eventually. Own it now and don't rely on everyone to write everything for you and just get it done for you. You have to be actively integral and integrated into the process. So,
right, absolutely.
Can't ask enough, and you know, very excited to just be in this market and helping.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, everyone, if you don't know, everyone on my guest list is, once I have the equipment, everyone on my guest list is going to be reinvited back to do this again in person. It's obvious. Are you interested?
100%, man. Awesome. I love what you're doing. I love the name. Mad I got away from my podcast. Somebody told me that if you don't make it past episode 7, that's kind of where you die, and that's exactly where I died. But it was me pivoting. I was trying to do the video. You can go look at it. Coast to Coast Canna Chat. It's still out there on YouTube, all the nice videos. So it'll give you some idea on some of the editing I did for the intro and outro.
Okay.
Definitely check it out, and we can talk about I'd be happy to help you with some of that stuff.
Perfect. I really appreciate that.
Least I can do for having me on the show. So
it's not a problem.
Feel free to snag a time anytime after next week, and we will get that done.
No, pest control kicks up too. The season is getting warm. It's getting warm, so all the bugs.
Do you come to Springfield?
I come to all over the state.
I've got fucking cave crickets.
Oh, well, what, in your basement?
Those motherfuckers, they are scary, and I love bugs. And they just I come down to my basement to work at like 4 a.m. and I have these things jumping at me. They jump like 6 feet.
Yes.
And then my family hears me screaming like a little kid down here when they're trying to sleep because there's bugs on me.
Their natural reaction is to jump towards you. That's why they're so scary.
But that's not what we're talking about here, but we'll talk offline on that one.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Quick dehumidifier will cure that problem.
And you are well positioned, my friend.
How do you mean?
As a pivot, as the invisible space that we were talking about, the money, the ancillary market, pest control, absolutely a critical component to ensuring that anything coming out of cultivation is quality. Because let's think about this: if it doesn't have that, if it doesn't pass, those plants have to get destroyed. They don't make it to manufacturing. They don't make it to retail. If that component of the operation is not in place and not managed appropriately, it has a really big cost impact on the downstream plant destruction, potential recalls, adverse event, all that stuff. And it starts with managing the environment of cultivation, of which you are in a really good position to apply what you do for pest control and everything else. So happy to make any connections I come across in this industry or in this state or tri-state area for anyone looking for that, because I really do think that is a great example. And another being janitorial services. This company Snappy is doing janitorial services and backing into distribution. So without going off on another tangent, I'll leave it there, but I think you've got a really bright future ahead of you here. So
I appreciate that very much. Thank you so much for coming, and I can't wait for round two.
Sounds great, man. I'm looking forward to it, and I'll keep you posted. I'm going to have a Canna family barbecue up here, and the general public won't be open to it. It won't be open to the general public, but I'm probably going to invite 40, 50 people up here. Sweet. Just to thank you appreciation day and open the pool and just chill. And that
awesome.
So I'll keep you posted. All right, man.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great weekend. All right.
You as well. Yes, happy Easter and such if you do.
Same. Yeah, you as well. And I'll talk to you next week.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, when does this, do you promote these right away?
Yeah, or I mean, it's going to be, I should be done in about 20 minutes. I don't know. It takes about 15 minutes to convert to MP3 with this old ass computer.
It would take me 3 weeks to do the video. Go watch the videos and all the editing and stuff I put in there. It was such a mistake. Because it was never timely and never get it out timely.
Oh, I gotcha. I gotcha.
Cool, man. Well, thank you again. I hope you have a great weekend, and let's definitely catch up again next week, all right?
Sweet. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Take care. And that was my interview with Jason Thomas. He told you exactly how to get in touch with him. By all means, contact him if you need to. I feel like he had a lot of information to give, a lot of great information. Definitely a champion of the craft. Get after it. I love the energy. Thank you so much for being on Kush and Coffee. Kush Coffee and Collabos, baby. Let's get it.